Okay, I just got an email from Mary Jo Lieber saying that she wanted to get the link, so I'm going to... We'll just do announcements right now, and I'll see if, how far I can get in sending people the information.
Good. So are there any announcements from folks who are on the line?
The AAAS deadline is the end of this week. I just wanted to remind people, if anybody's interested in putting in a symposium, I will be there, and I'm working to have a symposium on the National Climate Assessment submitted.
Right. So about the work that we've been doing on the education side of that, you want to report on that?
I'm just typing this message, just so.
Not a problem. So, any messages from the hall?
Oh, hi. We're back on now.
Good.
We hung up on for some reason.
Yeah, we just, you have to agree to be recorded since we have the recording out sort of publicly available.
So are we supposed to do something?
Yeah, do we need to do something
now?
Okay.
I think we're fine. You wouldn't be back on if you hadn't done the right thing.
Are you going? You'll tell us when to start. Are you going to do announcements first?
Absolutely.
We'll let you know when to start.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're staring at each other. Okay. Thank you.
No, I'm sorry. We never had this problem before where the email didn't go out, and I didn't realize it hadn't gone out until Scott had mentioned it. So then I just got an email from one of our members asking, okay, so I didn't see where's the website. Where is it? So I just sent you that. What I could do is I could send it out to the NASA list and the tri-agency list, but that's the intersection is not real complete.
Yeah. Well, we don't quite know where.
The other thing that I can say is that the National Climate Assessment, I think, was originally I heard that the release date was going to be on April 28th.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's now been pushed back a little bit, but they had their monthly call yesterday, but because of the holiday here in Massachusetts, I wasn't on that call. Scott, do you know if there's a new date?
We talked about this last week, and my understanding it's the week of the 5th of May, so another week.
Okay.
That started to seem, get firmer and firmer, and we actually went through, again, what the products will be out of that, the website, the highlight pages. We reviewed all of that stuff last week, so I think that's probably a pretty good date, the first week of May, and then that will put us under to move on our highlight summaries for educators. So we've continued to schedule the third Tuesday of the month for those joint calls with the National Climate Assessment Education Committee Group. The other thing that came out of last week, just to let you know, Tamara, is that actually talked quite a bit about social studies standards and social science standards. And so there's been some contact with some of the folks that worked with Karen Hallwig on the, I'll call it POLCA, and I can't remember what it stands for, but the resources that came out of the NAACP contract on climate resources. So they had put in geography and social science standards, and so one of the things we wanted to do is to make sure that we had folks who represented that recent work on the call. And so Lori, Lori is going to be part of that on in May, and hopefully do some a small presentation in our June meeting. Cumler, it's Lori Cumler.
Okay, well, I think we should just go ahead and get started. I have sent it out to at least some subset of the people, and we will post the recording so that everybody can view the listen to your presentation and hear the discussion later. So why don't I just move forward? Let me pull up. So we are having a presentation today by Catherine Halverson, Emily Weiss, and Tracy Weirman from the Lawrence Hall of Science. And they have been developing a curriculum in the ocean sciences and are going to talk to us now about ocean sciences curriculum sequence for grades 6 through 8, the ocean atmosphere connection and climate change. So, Catherine, I'll turn it over to you and your colleagues.
Okay, thank you very much, Tamara. We're really happy to be able to share our curriculum with this whole network that's been so impressive in doing such impressive work. And we're very happy to do this on Earth Day as well. We feel privileged for that. We're just going to briefly introduce ourselves, and then we're doing this as a tag team. So we'll each just follow each other and go through the PowerPoints and alert you when to look at the next PowerPoint. So I'm
okay, and I'll ask you just to mention the slide number so if people come in late, they can catch up.
Great. Will do. Okay, I'm Catherine, and Catherine Halverson from Lawrence Hall of Science at UC Berkeley. And Lawrence Hall of Science is the public science center of the University of California, Berkeley, and also an educational research center there. So in that role, I have led the development team that actually developed the ocean sciences sequences for both 3 to 5 and 6 to 8. And Emily and Tracy both played a large part in that, as well as a cast of thousands. I also direct a number of NSF projects, one of which I wanted to mention, which is developing a new climate change communication course for college students. And we are actually using some of the ocean sciences curriculum materials in that course. Okay, I'll turn it over to Emily.
Hi, so I'm Emily Weiss. I also work at the Hall, and as Catherine mentioned, I've been working on developing the sequences. And another project I'm working on right now that's pretty well related to the sequences is an NSF-funded project on argumentation, doing professional development for teachers around argumentation, which is one of the practices in the Next Generation Science Standards. And we have actually been using the Ocean Sciences Sequence curriculum as exemplar curriculum when we're working with our teachers and having them use that curriculum with their students in their classrooms because it provides a lot of opportunities for argumentation specifically and a lot of the other practices that are part of the Next Generation Science Standards. Turn it over to you, Tracy.
Good. Hi, my name is Tracy Weirman. I work with these wonderful ladies here at the Lawrence Hall of Science. My role is to support curriculum implementation efforts for a broad range of materials that are produced here by one particular team. That's a team that was referred to as GEMS and is now referred to as the Learning Design Group. The GEMS folks have a broad network that spans not only this country but internationally, and our role is really to help folks build capacity regionally so that they can support quality science instruction in their local regions. Very much the way Catherine and Emily described, argumentation seems to be a very hot topic right now, and I am also working on an NSF-funded project related to video supports that will help teachers put argumentation into place in their science curriculums at the middle school level, and we're really looking forward to having those videos available to help with the argumentation component in the ocean sciences sequence as children work to grapple with evidence and claims and reasoning in order to advance their understanding of this broad world we live in. So those are our introductions. If I could move you to slide 2, an overview of this presentation. Basically, as you see here, we're going to provide you an overview of this GEMS MARE developed ocean sciences curriculum sequence by taking a close look at one session. We will do a quick overview of the development process of these curriculum materials, as well as how they address the Common Core national standards and the Next Generation Science standards. Finally, we'll conclude with how and where these materials are being used and how you can find resources related to this sequence and other resources as well, with time for Q&A at the end. Hopefully, we'll have a quorum out there on the other end of the phone that will have some questions for us to keep the conversation lively. Slide 3, please. The Lawrence Hall of Science, as you can see by this slide, is a leading developer of not only supplemental science instructional materials, but some core materials as well. We are the home of FOSS, the Full Options Science System. CPUP is here, Hands-On Universe, Global System Science, Seeds of Science, Roots of Reading, After School of Kids Science, and more. I often refer to the Lawrence Hall of Science as a curriculum development engine. And that engine, we know, has reached about 25% of the nation's kids in K-12 science instructional material, meaning that somewhere in their K-12 span, about 25% of the country's kids are using materials that were developed here in our research-based process. It was fun to look at this particular number, which we pulled off our website, at 800,000 teachers and 12 million students having experienced our collection of GEMS materials, and I know that to be an old number, so we can probably add, maybe not a zero, but at least increase these numbers by some amount. We have had huge response to the materials that have been produced here, and are happy to say that both the United States Department of Education and NASA have identified GEMS, the Great Explorations in Math and Science Curriculum, as a high-quality educational partner. I want to read a little excerpt from some proceedings that came from an Astronomical Society of the Pacific Conference a few years ago. These comments were conveyed by Pinky Nelson, former astronaut and former AAAS director. He says, I want to recognize Jacqueline Barber. Jacqueline Barber is the director of GEMS and someone that we all respect and respond to quite quickly. I want to recognize Jacqueline Barber and the Lawrence Hall of Science for setting an example of effective partnership. He's talking about the work to develop the space science sequence, but he has also recently said very similar comments about the ocean sequence. He goes on to say these instructional materials respond to the challenge made a few years ago to produce something that incorporates the best cutting-edge research to help children learn grade-level appropriate ideas. By incorporating the latest findings from learning and cognitive science research and tackling a small set of important ideas, this team has produced a realistic and realizable curriculum. We would do well to become familiar with these materials and promote them to teachers and schools. So we're really excited to be here to do that with you today, and GEMS is really proud to add NOAA to our list of funders. And with that, we'll talk about the slide 4, those funding awards. We have 2 of them from the environmental literacy component from NASA's portfolio. One award, this is slide 4, was in 2007. That was for the 3-5 sequence. And the other was in 2009 for the 6-8 sequence. There's common characteristics across both of these sequences. We worked with subject matter experts, as Catherine will explain in a few minutes, and as we were developing these materials, we were guided by that wonderful Ocean Literacy Essential Principles of Ocean Sciences document. And coincidentally, it happened to be that the NRC framework and the Next Generation Science Standards were both being developed at the same time as the Ocean Sciences sequence were, So we were paying attention and making certain that these materials were as well aligned to those documents as possible so that when they were released, we could actually have an NGSS-aligned set of materials available for folks. And, of course, we've integrated a variety of other NOAA-related resources and URLs into these materials so that we can take advantage of all the good work that's gone out there in the research side of NOAA's portfolio. Passing it to Catherine.
Okay, thanks, Tracy. So one of the things we wanted to share with you was our curriculum development process. It's something we're very proud of and something that supports our materials and continues to support our materials. And one of the huge pieces of that is the quorum of people that are assembled right from the get-go to come together to decide what it is that are the really big ideas that we should be presenting for both developmental appropriateness and also for the concepts. And so we assembled NOAA Ocean Sciences educators, and they came from a wide range of departments, Sea Grants, National Marine Sanctuaries, the National Estuarine Research Reserve Systems, the Office of Exploration and Research, and the Office of Education. So all those came from NOAA, and they joined our big partner, who is from Rutgers and COSI Now. So their scientists came, their educators came, and also their visualization team. Then we also had other scientists and educator advisors and reviewers from across the country, and including from COSI California, of which LHS is a part, the hall is a part, and then our curriculum development team. And so we got together for a two-day planning meeting, and then following that meeting, we worked together, developed a draft sequence, sent it out for review, got back the reviews from the educators, curriculum developers, and scientists. And from that, we actually developed a pilot test that the curriculum developers taught here to classrooms in our local area, Berkeley and so forth. And from that, we then went on to develop a field test version. And that field test version was actually then sent out to 70 middle school teachers who then did the field test in over 100 classrooms. They sent back the results, the students' pre and post, the teachers' feedback, extensive feedback, and we incorporated all of that into a final draft for publication that went to Carolina Biological Curriculum Division for publication. That whole process actually takes about 3 years to go from initial development to publication of the material. Slide six, I wanted to be sure to show the list of reviewers and also people, the development team, scientists who worked on this with us throughout the three-year project. The ones on the left are all the folks, the scientists and the visualization team and the science educators from Rutgers who worked on this with us. And then on the right are the very distinguished list of scientists from NOAA and other institutions who worked on it as well. Couldn't have done it without them, that's for sure. Okay, slide seven. I just wanted to briefly show you our ocean sciences sequence, the overview for grades 3 to 5. And most of today's session is going to be spent on looking at 6-8 because that is our climate connection one, which your group is most interested in. But the grades 3 to 5 provide a nice sort of a building block and help in the understanding for the middle school students to pick up on. So there are 3 units, and there are also 3 units in the grades 6 to 8. These 3 units are developed so that each one could stand by itself, could be taught in a single year,
the entire sequence could be taught in a single year, so that one teacher is teaching Unit 1, 2, and 3 in their classroom. Or it could be spread out over 3 years and 3 grade levels. So just briefly, Unit 1 is what kind of place is the ocean? So this is really about the features of the ocean floor, the properties of ocean water, such as salinity, temperature, and pressure, and ocean currents. Unit 2 is much more focused on life science themes, and Unit 3 is much more in the connection. Slide 8, is introducing then the grades 6 through 8, our middle school curriculum, which we're going to focus the rest of this time on. Unit 1, then, is really an opportunity to look at the connection between the ocean and the atmosphere broadly. So this really delves into the interconnected nature of Earth systems, such as ocean and air currents, climate and weather patterns, the water cycle, and the flow and exchange of heat energy around the planet. So students learn about these connections through the lens of what sets water and air currents in motion, and how what happens in the ocean affects the atmosphere and vice versa. So you can see that we really made a big push on making this strong connection between ocean, atmosphere, and climate, because we were seeing in much of the curriculum that was already out there that this strong connection with the ocean and climate change was not being made, and we really wanted to focus on that aspect of it. So one of the important things that the students do is they have a lot of opportunities to delve into density, both as an observable phenomenon and also on the molecular level. So they come to an understanding of how density relates to the movement of water, air, and heat on Earth. So those are, you can see, some of the really big Earth system science opportunities that are provided to learn about those Earth system science. And also, we will show in a bit how that now connects to the next generation science standard as well. Okay, if we go on to slide 9, that presents Unit 2. And I think this is a very special unit, and one of the ones that we take a lot of pride in, because of the opportunity to really learn about the carbon cycle in depth, and how that then relates to climate change on Earth. So we look very, very carefully at carbon between carbon reservoirs in Earth systems, as it's so crucial to understanding climate change, yet it's often lacking in our curriculum. So students learn about how carbon flows from animals into the atmosphere through respiration, from the atmosphere into plants through photosynthesis, from the atmosphere into the ocean through absorption, into fossil fuels and sediments through decay, and from fossil fuels into the atmosphere through combustion. So Emily is going to take us more in depth on one session in Unit 2 to show us how that all fits together and the kinds of opportunities that students have to learn about the carbon cycle in this unit. And then lastly, slide 10 shows Unit 3. What are the causes and effects of climate change, as well as possible solutions? So they build on Unit 1 and Unit 2 in order to have a much better understanding of how it all works together in the causes and effects of climate change. So here they investigate topics such as the greenhouse effect, melting glaciers and sea ice, sea level rise, human contributions to rising atmospheric CO2 levels, and of course the effects on organisms and the ocean-atmosphere connection. So throughout that, they gain an understanding of the underlying causes of climate change and how pervasive its effects on the Earth system as a whole are. Okay, I'm now going to turn it over to Emily, and she will start with slide 11.
Hi, so we're going to look at session 2.7 now, which is the seventh session in Unit 2, and we're going to just use this as an example session. So as Catherine described, Unit 2 is all about how carbon flows through various reservoirs on Earth. In prior sessions, the students would have learned about photosynthesis, respiration, decomposition, and ocean absorption. And in the session just before 2.7, the students learn about how carbon flows into the reservoirs of fossil fuels and limestone through decay. So I'm going to have you go to slide number 12 now. And on slide 12, so basically what happens is the students are going to now investigate how carbon can move out of those reservoirs. So they've just looked at how it gets in. Now we're going to start looking at how it gets out, especially out of those fossil fuel reservoirs. So the way students start is they get a set of flow cards, and you can see a picture of what the flow cards look like on the screen. Here's an example. The front and the back of these particular cards don't match, but there's a front of a card where it has an image of what the source of the fossil fuels coming into the atmosphere looks like in this particular case for that flow. And then on the back, it gives you some information about that particular flow, so the students can read a bit more about that and more information about that. So the students get flow cards for a whole bunch of different flows within the Earth system, and they're tasked with choosing two flows that take carbon out of fossil fuels and two that take carbon out of limestone. And the students then share that information with each other. And then the class focuses in on just one of these flows. They're going to look at human industry and the combustion of fossil fuels. You can advance to slide number 13 now. So the teacher then shares that most of the carbon that flows out of these reservoirs is because of human industry. And she asks the students to consider the guiding question that's on the slide. How does human industry affect flows of carbon in the carbon cycle? And the teacher then burns a paraffin candle to demonstrate how the carbon in fossil fuel is converted to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere during combustion. So the students get to see a physical example of that happening. You can go on to slide 14. Then the class gets to explore two models of the carbon cycle with a continuing focus on the combustion of fossil fuels. So up until this point, the students have actually been developing their own carbon cycle diagrams. So as they're gathering information about different flows between reservoirs on Earth, they are actually making their own carbon cycle diagram just on a piece of paper that has a picture of land and a picture of the ocean and a picture of the atmosphere. And students are adding different different reservoirs in as they learn about those reservoirs. So they add in some little examples of animals, and they add in some examples of plants and all the different reservoirs. But they also are showing the flows between those reservoirs as they're building their carbon cycle models. So now they're looking at an interactive carbon cycle diagram so that they're actually much better able to interpret what they're seeing on the screen now in this more complex version of a carbon cycle diagram, something that looks a lot like what they might see in a textbook or in a scientific paper. And the students are pretty well equipped at this point to interpret it. And what the students do is they, with this computer model at first, is they can actually click on each of the reservoirs and flows to gather more information about the different reservoirs and the different flows. So if you go on to slide number 15, see an example of what the students might see. So here are two sample flows that the students would look at. So if they clicked on, for example, animal respiration, they would see an animated version of the green slide on the green card on the left. You'd see all of the carbon dioxide flowing out of the cow's mouth and some methane as well. And the students get to look at that, and they're also looking at natural flows like the animal respiration, and they're also looking at flows from human industry. So this red one on the right is an example of that. And as I said, they were going to look more closely at the combustion of fossil fuels flow in particular. Okay. So students, after they get a chance to look through this interactive carbon cycle diagram, they take some time to discuss the strengths and the weaknesses of this particular model. And one of the weaknesses that the students notice is that they can't actually track individual carbon atoms as they're flowing through the system. So they can see that carbon is flowing between reservoirs, but they can't see which, like, one particular carbon atom that's flowing from one reservoir into another reservoir, where it goes next. They can't just track that carbon atom moving around. So we let the students then move on to a different kind of a model. If you go on to slide 16, you'll be able to see that model. And this one is more like a board game. What the students do in this case is they have some different colored paper clips. They have green, blue, black, red, and white or silver paper clips. And they also have some dice. And what the students are doing here is they start their paper clips off in each of these different reservoirs. It's a pretty simplified version of a carbon cycle. So they'd start their red paper clips off in the animal circle, and they'd start their black ones off in the fossil fuel circle, et cetera. And then they roll their die, and their die tell them, you know, how many paper clips they are, sorry, which flows they are supposed to move their paper clips into. So they take one paper clip, and they move it wherever the die tells them to. So, for example, if the students started off in the animal reservoir and they rolled a 6, the students would then move one carbon atom into the fossil fuel and limestone reservoir. So the students can now track that red paper clip and see where that particular carbon atom that started off in the animal reservoir is going, and they can track it as it moves around throughout the carbon cycle. And as students are playing this game, they go around and they play, each student gets a turn for each reservoir. So they get several tries to go through the entire carbon cycle. And after they're all done playing, the students are supposed to reflect on which reservoirs increase, which decrease, what's your evidence, which reservoir gains the most atoms from different reservoirs, and what happens to the total number of carbon atoms on Earth. And through discussion with their peers, students note that the total number of carbon atoms on Earth don't actually change, but the number of atoms that are in particular reservoirs do. So they're getting to see how carbon moves back and forth through the different reservoirs. And if you go on to slide number 17, you'll see where the students go from here. So now that they know that carbon is moving around, the teacher shares with the students that fossil fuel combustion has actually increased over the past 200 years. So the students get to look at this graph, and they see the sources of fossil fuels that have been contributing to this increase. So they see fossil fuel combustion, and they see the different fossil fuels that have contributed. And then the students go on to play that paperclip game a second time. But now they have a modified version of the game board, which now actually has the paperclips moving from the fossil fuel reservoir into the atmosphere a lot more frequently. So more rolls of the die will actually produce movement from the fossil fuel reservoir into the atmosphere reservoir. And now they compare the playing of the game from the first iteration to the second iteration. So the students notice, again, that the total number of carbon atoms in the Earth system has not changed, but the places where those carbon atoms are moving is really different when you have human industry involved. Okay, so if you move on to slide number 18, see the key concepts that we hope students will take away at the end of this session. So we want students to understand that carbon moves between reservoirs, but the total amount of carbon on Earth doesn't change, and that human industry moves carbon out of fossil fuel and limestone reservoirs and into the atmosphere. And students get there by messing around with these different models, and they get to play with two different models. They're looking at the strengths and weaknesses of these models. They're engaging in discourse with each other and some aspects of argumentation where they're using evidence to support the claims that they're making about what is going on in these different models. And students are also we'll move on to the next slide. Sorry. So if you go on to slide number 19, can look at how we are aligned to the standards. So this actually takes us nicely into an alignment with the standards. We're going to look at really quickly first. Tracy had already mentioned that we're nicely aligned to the ocean literacy framework. And I also wanted to mention that we're aligned nicely to the climate literacy frameworks. And you can actually find that alignment embedded within the curriculum. So there are places where we actually call out our connections to the ocean literacy and climate literacy frameworks or climate literacy standards. So we also are very nicely connected to NGSS. Both the Next Generation Science Standards and the original framework upon which NGSS was based. So we align very nicely to the core ideas, the disciplinary core ideas, which are more the content types of standards, as well as the science and engineering practices and the cross-cutting concepts. So I talked a little bit about the kinds of science and engineering practices that we call out in, that we have students engage in when they're moving through this curriculum. And we're also well aligned to the Common Core State Standards for English Language Arts and Literacy in history, social studies, science, and technical subjects. And a lot of people call the Common Core State Standards for English Language Arts just that, and they kind of stop at that point. But they really are supposed to be tied into the other disciplines. And so one of the places where those standards overlap quite nicely is if you move on to the next slide, slide number 19 now, or 20, sorry. You can see in the overlap between Common Core English Language Arts and the Next Generation Science Standards, this middle section of the Venn diagram shows that those two sets of standards support each other really well if you look at using content-rich text as a source of knowledge, obtaining, evaluating, and communicating information, constructing and critiquing arguments, reading, writing, and speaking grounded in evidence, and engaging in argument from evidence. So we feel that the Ocean Sciences Sequence provides numerous opportunities to engage in all of these practices and skills, as well as the other science practices that don't overlap with the Common Core. I'm going to turn it back over to Tracy.
Good. Hi there. Nicely done, Emily. Good content there. So as I introduced myself, I stated that I was the curriculum implementation lead. So that means once the materials are published and we're ready to have them out there in the teacher's hands or other folks' hands, we want to make certain that we're offering kind of back-of-house support and opportunities for folks to grow their own use of these materials with our assistance, whether that's somewhat low behind the scenes or really overt in front of folks as we partner with people across the country. So we are happy to say that we have Ocean Sciences Sequence use in Bellingham, Washington, yay Washington, as well as Boston, Massachusetts, Santa Barbara, another Washington site at the Tohola School on the Quinault Indian Reservation. And we've got about 140 field test teachers out there who we know were smitten with these materials who are also using them, as well as folks who were part of a space science sequence effort who were very anxious to get their hands on the ocean science equivalent. So we have a growing base of users for this relatively new curriculum resource. We also, in the GEMS world, have a thing we call the GEMS Network. This is a collection of about 70 different partnerships, official partnerships, between our office and other institutions across the country. These include university programs, public science centers, as well as like area education agencies and county offices of education. And in many cases, our GEMS Network partners are out there leading their own charge to put support in place for people who are choosing to use these curriculum materials. So a shout out, I think she's on the phone with us, to Laura Tucker, who leads the Port Townsend Marine Science Center GEM site. Laura is offering an ocean science sequence workshop right there on the banks of the Puget Sound up in the Straits there in Port Townsend. And her workshop is from June 24th through June 27th. If you go on the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website, you can find the links and all that information. We're also offering a workshop on all of the sequence with a focus on argumentation on one of the days here at Lawrence Hall of Science in the first week of August, August 4th through 8th. And you can go on
our website to find out more about that. Other ways the materials are being used is through two different NSF-funded climate change education partnership projects, one of which Catherine referred to earlier. We're using these materials in a variety of different conference presentations and university courses to try to build adult-level content on these ideas, and I've had the pleasure of co-presenting with both Emily and Catherine, and it's been very rewarding to see the aha moment for adult educators as they grapple with things like the ocean as a heat reservoir or this carbon flow idea. So wonderful to be able to build content knowledge for the folks who need to be able to share their knowledge with students as well. As we all mentioned, we're using these materials to help us with professional development focused on argumentation. The materials are being used as part of the Communicating Climate Science course, NSF research projects. We see them in use at summer camp for middle school students, and I know that these two were awfully excited because the materials were being used for the ocean acidification course for the Teacher at Sea program. So lots of ways that people can take these materials and use all or pieces and parts to help them advance their particular goals. We also can add to the bottom of that particular slide, this is brand new information, that we were recommended for funding to use the Ocean Sciences Sequence 6-8 in pre-service programs across the country. So stay tuned. Once that recommendation has turned into actual funding, we'll say more. And I'll turn it back over to Catherine.
Okay, last slide, slide 22. And it's an important slide, though it's the last one. Because this provides the opportunity to find information on the ocean science sequences, and including you can download some material, the session 2.7, actually, that Emily was describing. You can get that whole thing, including all of those, the game board and so forth. And in addition, all of the simulations, including the carbon cycle simulation that Emily was referring to, are available for download from this same website here, the mare.lawrencehallofscience.org website. And you're free to go there and just peruse, and also to see the alignment with Next Generation Science Standards as well. You can find that there. If you're interested in purchasing the curriculum itself, it is available from Carolina Curriculum, and that URL is also there. One of the other things that is going to be up on our website soon are some additional resources that you could also download. We have developed three additional hands-on inquiry-based activities that are aligned with Next Generation Science Standards that we will be putting up there. One is on ocean acidification. Another is a on the greenhouse effect, which we are really proud of. It actually works every single time, so love that. And then a sea level rise activity too. So these will be, we'll be using these and providing them to our teachers as additional opportunities to have their kids do hands-on activities. But we've also been using them in our college course, on the museum floor here, and so forth, to help the public learn more about these as well. So with that, we have made it through our slides and a quick review of the ocean sciences sequence, and would love to answer any questions that you might have.
And this is Frank Diepold. Sorry, it's a little noisy where I am. You might have asked a question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I really appreciate all the work you're doing and continue to do on the critical intersection between ocean and climate. It's impressive work, and I'm very happy that you guys are presenting to our community. But one of the key things that I didn't hear, and it was a little hard where I was, and sorry for the background noise, it's Earth Day, guys. A lot going on today. But is the kind of in the new framework, this revolution that the NRC framework called for, and when you design your curriculum activities and programs in the three dimensions of the Next Generation Science Standards, can you speak for a moment about how you see the really how to do it differently, because you refer to it as alignment, but I think you've done more than just alignment. I think you've built them within the context of the spirit of the way these new standards were really designed. And is that a fair characterization? And if so, how is that different, you know, within the old standards? And then, you know, you guys are in some ways the first out of the gate that I've heard of that really built it from that new foundation as deeply as you have.
Thanks, Frank. I'll take first, and if anyone else would like to add to that. That I think that is a really nice description. We felt like we were in a great place at a great time to be able to do more than just align, but rather, as you said, to build it from the ground up. And part of that is because we were one of the critical stakeholders who were reviewing the framework in NGSS as it came out over a number of years through those iterations. And so we were able to look at those and put those principles into play as we were developing this curriculum as well. So, you know, right place, right time sort of thing. And then speaking about the spirit and how it's different from the previous versions of the standards, one of the things that was really important to do is to think about those few big ideas that we could have the students address in depth, which is something that NGSS is also all about. And so choosing those that we could actually provide multiple ways for students to grapple with, so that they would read about them, they would importantly talk about them, they would have opportunities to have hands-on experiences, to work with models, and so forth. So all this means that you can't cover everything, which is a wonderful thing, you know, so that we could choose those things that we thought were most important for students to grapple with. And the other big thing that I want to mention here is the opportunity to focus on argumentation. And our focus throughout this curriculum is shown both in the sidebars on the curriculum itself, is looking at arguing from evidence and the different ways that teachers are focusing on that to help their students and themselves to become more facile with that. And so it builds on itself as you go through the units of helping students to first understand what evidence is, what good evidence is, how you use evidence to build your arguments, and how you use that evidence to construct explanations. And so students are provided with opportunities to do all of those things, part and parcel in the curriculum, with the prompts that the teachers are asking, the opportunities for kids to speak with their peers, because we know how important that is for understanding. So those are just some of the kinds of things that I think, for me, really came out as important to include.
The only thing I would add to that is just, you know, I think in the performance expectations that are a part of NGSS now, and that part of the way NGSS is constructed, the performance expectations ask for students to incorporate the practices, the disciplinary core ideas, and the cross-cutting concepts all together for their learning. And throughout the sequences, we provide multiple opportunities for students to engage in things that look a lot like the performance expectations, not because we were trying to just have kids, you know, prepare for a test to be able to do the performance expectations, but because we thought it was the best way for students to learn, that in order to really understand those big ideas, they needed to be engaging in the practices of science and being able to connect those very focused concepts back to bigger ideas like the cross-cutting concepts. Okay. Thanks, Frank.
Awesome.
That was a good question.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Yeah, this is a question for Catherine and Emily and Tracy. This is kind of a building on that. This is called a ocean sciences sequence, and I'm curious what parts of sort of new learning science research has recommended the sequencing of these materials. What have you learned about, you know, one shouldn't talk about, I don't know, greenhouse effect perhaps in at 3-5, but we can introduce it in this way so that it build, it sets the foundation for something that we can tackle in middle school. Do you have any insights into that that are embedded into the sequence?
Well, one of the things that we really tried to focus on was this idea that in the 3-5, we didn't want to delve very deeply into density itself. Mm-hmm. Rather, we really focused on the phenomenological, looking at mm-hmm. what differences look like and how might differences come about in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And we build on those ideas then in the middle school curriculum when we hit density hard and mm-hmm. look at it, as I mentioned, from a molecular, what's going on with the molecules, mm-hmm. as well as what is the effect on that in ocean and atmosphere, setting it in motion. Mm-hmm. One of the learning sciences aspects that we have focused on throughout is some of those foundational ideas about learning that we incorporate into everything we do. And one of those is a focus on prior knowledge. Mm-hmm. So all of our curricular materials build, that's the base. We build on prior knowledge and come back to that and make connections to that. Mm-hmm. Another one is the opportunity that learning occurs in a social environment. And so mm-hmm. we make sure there's ample opportunities for students to talk about their ideas, to see how their ideas are picked up by others, to see how they sound when they, when they actually verbalize them, and see what they really think. So much learning takes place from conversations with others. And then another one is that learning is active, and so those opportunities to really have all those different ways to actively engage your head, as well as your hands and the soul, as you are learning these materials. So, Tracy, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
From a more basic aspect, the idea when we started the space science sequence work, we did a survey across the country of how many sessions teachers felt that they could spend on these content pieces, and something similar was done with the ocean science sequence. So we knew that we couldn't go beyond a certain number of sessions across the 3-5 sequence or across the 6-8 sequence if we wanted to have a chance of uptake. And then mm-hmm. the sequence is really built with the materials being divided into the units, as Catherine described earlier, so that you could either teach all those units at one grade level. So I teach fifth grade, I'm going to teach all the 3-5 content, or I can divide that up across my school system. So Catherine teaches the third graders, Emily teaches the fourth grade unit, and I teach the final unit to the fifth graders, so that you can really build their understanding over time. You're introducing mm-hmm. them to routines that can be brought forward to that fourth grade, that fifth grade, that sixth grade, et cetera. So both big ideas in terms of how we structured the material itself and then how we wove those learning sciences pieces in there.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you, Scott. Any other questions?
We're just about to the end of our hour, so I'll ask it once again. Are there any questions?
I have a follow-up, if that's okay.
Sure.
Sure. So here's the question. Stephen Pruitt and Achieve have been working really hard on making sure that the way we construct around NGSS is different than the way we've already done it. And one of the things they're concerned about is, from different conversations, is the whole idea of alignment, that we're basically just going to say the stuff we've always done just is going to meet those new standards, and it's not really changing the way we teach. I heard a lot of very different language you're using in the way you're approaching, the way you've designed this. That's why I asked that question before. But has Achieve been briefed on or the NRC, Board of Science Education, on the way you approached this, these new standards, and if they kind of, are they on board, or do they support, or are they aware of this new project? I think it would be important for them to know kind of how, where you are in this exploration of new curricular materials.
That's great, Frank. And that's on our list. We need to talk to them, yeah. Absolutely. But one of the things that just came out is their rubric for lessons and units in science. So, and I don't know if you've seen, I just
thought it came out, but I haven't actually gotten into it.
Okay. So I've only looked at it briefly. I've looked at the categories that they're asking to look at alignment, and I feel very confident that we will do very well on this. So I plan to fill this out and send it back to them. Yeah. So I was so happy.
Well,
actually,
it would be nice to see how you did that. I mean, it would be great to see that if you feel like sharing it.
Absolutely. I'll send it to you, too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay, so we are at our end of our hour here. I personally have to leave for another meeting. People are welcome to continue to talk if they like, but I will formally end the conversation now, and we will talk again next week. Thank you very much, Catherine, Tracy, and Emily.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, everyone.
Happy birthday.
Birthday.